introduce our main speaker, Lynn, from Rancho Santa Fe.
Good evening. My name is Lynn, and I am an alcoholic. And I've had something in my throat for about 2 days, so I hope it won't prevent us from enjoying the meeting tonight. I have some eucalyptus mint and some water, and I would like to thank Pat for inviting me and all of you for making me feel so welcome. Many of you have heard me more than once, and I thank you for patiently listening tonight while I will be addressing the newcomers. And Jim, I think you did a marvelous job. 5 minutes is so difficult. It takes 2 minutes to warm up, 1 minute to exit, and you're supposed to talk about what it was like, what happened, and how it is today. And you said it all. Thank you very much. I want to warn you that the last minute, Marcelo, thank you. The last meeting where I spoke Saturday night, Charles, who is here tonight, was leading the meeting. And in his closing statement, he said, "Oh, I forgot to spank the speaker." We will see tonight if I inspire the same sentiment. Or if Charles is a willing horse who needs not be spurred on. Oh, goodness. Those of you who are new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not a gloom lot, and we love to laugh. Although we are talking about a serious, deadly disease, we love to laugh, and we want to love one another, and we want to get close to one another. And you have no idea that you are the luckiest people in the world to be here tonight with us. And this is a pretty classy joint. I don't know where you've done your last couple of years of drinking, but I bet that this is a step up for most of you. If you were looking for an inferior companion, you have found all of us. We are here. Come with us. And you may not believe that someone who looks like me tonight might possibly be an alcoholic. However, I will tell you a little story that should erase all doubts. I was sober for a few years in my office, feeling very good about myself, looking out the window, and there is this young, handsome man who passed by and winked at me, and so I winked back. And a few minutes later, he came back, opened the door, and said, "Hi, do you recognize me?" And I said, "Oh, from the gym?" He said, "No." I said, "Real estate?" He said, "No." "Bill Wilson?" He said, "No. Lynn, you came with me to my classes at Palomar College." Now, I don't recall ever going to Palomar College. And he said, "You came with me to drink margaritas at Bazar del Mundo, and although it rained, we had my sunroof open because you thought it was romantic." Oh. He added, "You make some mean omelets." Thank you. He said, "Lynn, are you alone here?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "You slept with me." Oh! How interesting. "What was your name again?" Now, I am not proud of the things that I did when I was drinking, but I'm grateful for them because they brought me to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you see, this is the way that I drank. As hard as I could, as often as I could, and as fast as I could, I needed to drink. And this gentleman with whom I could not argue because I did not remember was telling me that I had had at least 3 dates with him during the day, and I had no recollection. Since I was 3, 4, 5 years old, I was riddled with fear. I was extremely self-conscious. I knew you would not like me. I knew you would not want me. I was afraid of my father. I was afraid of my mother. I was afraid of the dark. I was afraid of being alone. I was terrified. I had nightmares. I could not make friends. I feel that I did not belong. I felt so different inside. And you all seem to know what to say, to know what to do, to have fun together, and I did not know how to join the circle. I did not know how to do that. And it was very painful. And when I was about 13 years old, I went to this party and I bought 6 beers. The first time I think I drank. And this was the answer to my problem. All my feelings of fear, they all went away. And it was warm in my gut here where I live. And I could be jolly. I was with you. We held each other by the shoulders and we sang and it was wonderful. And I blacked out. I went to get my 6th and last beer, and he told me my girlfriend Susan drank my beer. I found Susan and I slapped her in the face. Now, this is not social drinking. This is already how important alcohol was to me, the answer to my problems. So I thought, well, if only I had a good education, then I could be happy. So I proceeded to obtaining a license to practice law, and I drank more. I thought, well, I need to go to California. Then I could be happy. I came here, didn't have to work, and had all the time to drink even more. Then I thought, if only I had a young, handsome, rich boyfriend, then I could be happy. I found him, and we drank together. Then I thought, if only I had a cleaning lady, then I could be happy. And I got a cleaning lady, and while supervising her work, I drank. I drank because I am an alcoholic. My outside circumstances are irrelevant. I drank because I am an alcoholic. And what makes me different than a normal person is that I cannot have 1 or 2 drinks. Once I start to drink, I have to finish my drunk. It's beyond my human power to stop drinking. And I don't know why this relationship with this gentleman did not work out, except that I slept with his best friend. And I hope to never again see so much pain and hurt in someone's eyes because I've caused it. I did not like his best friend. I was simply drunk enough that night. And I spent the night in this man's apartment, and at 6 o'clock there was a knock on the door. There was a nightgown on the floor, and I put that on, and we opened the door, and it was his girlfriend, who happened to be my boyfriend's secretary. It's amazing how quickly I can create so much havoc. I was one of those bad things that happens to good people, you know, very quickly. And 3 or 4 days later, I got a call from this lady that it was time for me to come and pick up my stuff, which had been put in trash bags. And I put those in my car, and these were all my worldly belongings. At that point, I knew that although I had a great education, I was emotionally unemployable because of the way I drank, and I had accepted that. I knew that there was not a man in whom I could be possibly interested who would ever marry me because of the way I drank, and I had accepted that. I knew that although I wanted children, I could not have them because of the way I drank, and I had accepted that. not to drink was simply inconceivable. I lived for the next time I could numb those feelings, the self-loathing, the low self-esteem, the lack of self-worth, the not knowing how to live, the not knowing how to be a friend, how to make a phone call and set up an appointment with a girlfriend, how to have a decent conversation, how to have friends at home without my being drunk first, or how attending a party without being drunk first. I did not know how to live. And the only time when I ever felt comfortable or at peace was when I was drunk. Not to drink was uncomfortable. And so I rented a room in a sleazy two-bedroom apartment. I slept on the floor in a sleeping bag, and my clothes were on the floor, and I was dying. I did not know what to do. I had given life my very best shot. And I was 27 years old, and I was sleeping on the floor alone. I was estranged from my family. I had lost my friends, and I did not know what was wrong with me. I wanted to win that man's heart back because I did not think I could live without a man, without someone to keep a lid on me and make decisions for myself. And I had learned how to scrape Mexican tiles, and in this beautiful home where we lived, we had three rooms of beautiful tiles, and I told him I would do that for him free. And so I drove my car there, and I worked that Thursday, and that night I slept in my car, literally because it was more comfortable than my floor. Very simple. And I had my jug of vodka, and I drank some of it in the morning, and I rang the bell, and good morning, and I got on my knees to scrape those tiles. And meanwhile, they were having a party that afternoon. There was a tennis court in the backyard and so forth. And my friends were coming to the party. And those friends I had over to my house for dinner. But I was not invited to that party. I was on my knees scrubbing, and they were saying, "Hi, Lynn," passing me by and going to the tennis court in the backyard. I can't tell you how I felt, but I think that you know where alcohol takes us. And the party was over, and that man took me on the floor. And this was a man who had loved me. And while he was having sex with me, I looked up. And I realized that he was trying not to touch me. And this was a dagger through my heart, right through my soul. It was not so much an intellectual understanding of who I was, but a feeling that I was worse than worthless. That afternoon, I left that house because he told me to. I stopped by a liquor store, and I bought two small bottles, which I guzzled, and I drove home to drink some more. All throughout the weekend, but I could not get drunk somehow. And on Monday morning, I reached for the bottle of vodka, and it couldn't stay down, so I had a beer to settle my nerves a little bit. And by 10 o'clock, I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and the man said, "Oh, you would like to stop drinking?" I said, "Oh, no. I just want to learn how to have five or six and then stop, because it's after that I get into all this trouble." He said, "Well, when you're ready to stop drinking, call us back," and he hung up. And I saw myself in that dirty purple bathrobe with that half a beer, and I had nowhere else to go. And there was a strong, firm voice in my head that said, "Lynn, this is it for you. There is nothing left in this for you. This is over." And by 1 o'clock, I called back Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you see, I can never, ever take credit for my sobriety, because that morning on June 21st, 1982, When I called AA, I told them I didn't want to stop drinking. I never prayed for it. I never imagined it, envisioned it, hoped for it, tried for it. I did not want to stop drinking. And by 1 o'clock, I had had my last drink. This is a gift. And when I called back, he said, this lady from your area will call you back. And she did, and we talked a while. I have no recollection of what was said, except she said, would you like to go somewhere? And I said, oh, yes, I'm a traveler. I love going places. And I thought I would be taken to the La Costa Spa. I would send a bill to my ex, who was wealthy. I didn't think that would be any problem. And she said, pack a few clothes, and my husband and I will pick you up in a few minutes. And they picked me up, and they took me to Dupac downtown. I was disappointed. However, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous began that day for me. The counselor gave me the 20 questions. I thought, gee, I take a test much more difficult than this. This shouldn't be any problem at all. And in fact, I did get 17 right the first time. And he said, you are an alcoholic. I said, I know. He said, no kidding, you really are an alcoholic. I said, I know. He said, what is so funny about this? And I said, well, finally, someone tells me what is wrong with me. I have branded myself a lot worse things than being an alcoholic. And you are telling me that there are other people like me who have done those shameful things, who have drank the way that I did, and that they have found a way to be happy and sober. Now, to be sober is one thing, but to be happy and sober was inconceivable to me. And he said, as long as I was willing to follow the simple suggestions laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I could be happy and sober too. Well, this was the greatest news I had heard in a long, long time. A long time. And so I stayed in detox for 10 days. Then I went to a recovery house for alcoholic women, and I'll tell you, I had a lot of problems. All these fears since I was little, and all these defects, and they told me that I had to be honest. Well, the truth will make you free, but first it will make you very miserable. So we had to find out what were those emotional blocks which prevented me to be comfortable enough to be sober. And this big book does not promise us that things will always be perfect and wonderful. But what it tells me is that depending upon a fit spiritual condition, I will always be comfortable enough not to have to drink. And as far as I'm concerned, this is my job. To nurture my sobriety is my responsibility. The same as the flowers that I grow. No matter how much my higher power wants for my flowers to grow, unless I water them daily, they will wither away and die. No matter how much my higher power wants for me to be sober, unless I nurture my sobriety on a daily basis, I will wither away and die alone. And I never, ever want to drink again. And if you are new and you never want to drink again, you don't have to. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail. So the odds are as good as they get. And they asked Bill Wilson, why didn't you say, never have we seen? And Bill said, well, we knew who we were talking to. And if we said, never have we seen, those in the back row right away would say, we'll show you one. So we put rarely. For those who have thoroughly followed the path. And the thoroughly, that's my job. And tonight, each and every one of us is doing the absolutely most important thing that we can do in our lives today. And it's to water our sobriety garden. So today we can be comfortable enough not to have to drink. And I will share with you that to be comfortable enough not to have to drink has been a minimum. Most days are joyful and happy. And it's been a tremendous adventure. And if you are new, please embark upon it with us. We have this divine creator who's made this wonderful alcoholic roller coaster just for us. And it's solid, and it's well ordered, and it's well designed, and it is safe, and it is secure. Get on it with us. It's just horrendous. We can live where we can be happy, we can live without fear, and it can be warm in our gut here, where we live, warm and comfortable with our fellow men. And these emotional blocks, which need to be removed, need to be removed relatively quickly. And it's not easy. I've just been going through this period in the last few months where I've had to let go of some of my defects, and it's like passing furballs. Have you ever seen a cat passing a fur ball? It goes like this. And I was dating this gorgeous man, and I have a weakness for bad boys. A weakness for bad boys, and I complain that they're not loving and compassionate. I'm a lover. What can I say? I love quickly, deeply, briefly, and often. The bad boys. And so this one, this particular evening, observed me having one of my tantrums. And he said, "You're out of control." Now, no one has ever confronted me with my tantrums. And they are my friends. Since I was a little girl, if I don't get my way, I throw a tantrum, and you either give it to me, or you get defensive, or you attack back, then I have some ammunition to play with. But if someone says nothing, the pie is thrown right back into my face. And so, thank goodness, I was going through Georgia Step Workshop, for which I am so grateful, and it's one of the sad things, if you live in San Diego, that you don't get to come up to Encinitas in North County to attend to her step workshop, and she's here with us tonight. She's our little angel, we call her. And if any one of you really wants to get to those steps, it usually starts in January, and it's on every Monday of the week for 2 hours and 15 minutes, and you get through all those steps. And it is an absolute blessing. And although I've been sober for 17 years, watering my garden daily for 17 years, I have learned so much. And the timing was perfect. And so I had to give up those defects and make amends for my defects. And once we pass that, of course, there is the elation period. In one of the books that I have read, it said that God will exalt the humble and humble the exalted. And so I was being humbled for a while, and I couldn't wait for the pendulum to swing back, and now I'm feeling elated, and life goes on, and it's wonderful. So it's to not be so afraid about getting rid of those emotional blocks that we live in slavery to them and have to be unhappy. And what happens with me, and I believe it's the same for all of us, is when one of my defects rear its ugly head, they all come out like worms after the rain. See, for me to be angry means I have to be judgmental, critical, self-righteous, self-centered, wanting it my way. Here I am creating havoc again with a 2-minute tantrum. And to tell you the truth, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm practicing right now at loving everyone, and I'm at peace. People greet me, I feel love and acceptance of them, and therefore I can feel loved and accepted as well. It has to start with me. So love one another. There is no time anymore for resentment and walls and distance between us. Life is too short. Let's just love one another. And we have the tools to do that here. We are taught, we teach each other how to love one another. And once we have these character defects removed, then we do those inventory and we look at our days constructively. This wonderful big book here, if you don't have one yet, please do not leave the meeting tonight without it. And I'll tell you a little secret. Those of you who are new, on page 86, it tells us every night when we do upon retirement, and it's very simple. Were we resentful? Were we selfish, dishonest? And it takes about 5 minutes. Well, maybe 30 on a bad day. But we look at it, and we keep our slate clean. And on awakening, we'll look at our day. And if we have an indecision, we pause. Pause. Are you natural pausers? Let's go to Tijuana, of course. Let's get into another relationship. Sure, I'll have a date. Let's not worry about anything. We're full of life. We are full of adventure. And this, in a way, helps us to be moderate a little bit. And something else that helps us be moderate is prayer and meditation. Well, now, there is something very disappointing in the big book about praying, and it's that we cannot pray for selfish things. However, and that's when, if you're new and you don't have a sponsor, it's time to get one, because I'm a sponsor and I know secrets, and all the sponsors here tonight, they know secrets, little shortcuts. And so this particular time, I wanted a new motorcycle. And so what I did is I asked a girlfriend of mine to pray that I get a motorcycle. And I got it. Prayer is very powerful. Last year I was at this job managing a real estate office with 14 employees, and I was not suited for it, and I was getting paranoid with the people being mad at me and unhappy, and I did not feel loved and wanted and accepted, that's for sure. And on Thursday I was at one of my meetings, and I shared that with this lady, and she said, oh, in your prayers tonight, ask God to show you how to make these people comfortable with you. Oh, that's a neat idea. I did that, and the next day I was terminated. So I called her, and I said, I don't like your prayers, but I need another one. She said, well, pray for the perfect job and the patience to wait for it. That same week, that Wednesday, there was a message on my answering machine. Lynn, this is Eileen with legal staff, and you have not been registered with us for a long time, and I know you have a good job, but I have this opportunity, and I thought I'd let you know. Now, Wednesday, that meant nothing, but Friday, I had a different attitude about it. Would you know, this was last November, and this is now my job, and I love my job. And if it had been presented to me before I tried it, I would have turned it down. But I began working for the company, and something else came up, and it suits me perfectly. I'm a legal secretary, which I've never done before, and I'm the floater. And I am a floater. This is my life. I do it at play. I had a hard time having a home group for more than 3 years, because then I take a break and I go back again, and I change sponsor after a few years, and I change from one bad boy, and then I take another a little while later, and that work is the same thing. I replace those who are absent or on vacation. And it's like being the mistress as to the secretaries are the wives. See, I never hang out long enough for them to figure out my defects. By the time I come back, I've been missed. They're always nice to me because they need my favors and my services. I mean, this is just wonderful. All that because of a phone call that came 2 days before I was terminated from a job where I was so uncomfortable. And this is the roller coaster and the divine order that I was referring to earlier. There are no mistakes here. everything happens for a reason. And another little prayer that I've enjoyed, I love cats. And I had two and one disappeared. And there were two breeds in which I was interested, and I couldn't decide, and so I bought both. And on the Wednesday night after my little episode, I prayed to God, and I said, oh, I hope it's okay to buy two expensive cats. And that was the week I was terminated as well. And the next morning, I'm on my way to work, and the bumper sticker, the license plate in front of me said, two is fine. Now, Georgia would say, no, 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 Lynn. And prayer is a lot of fun. Meditation is another ball game altogether. It's still difficult. See, we are busy up here. This is a busy place. And the difference has been there for all those years. And it's just waiting for me to slow down, to stop calling my sponsor, to not have commitments anymore, to slow down on my meetings, not to say my prayers anymore. It's just waiting to catch up with me. And it's my responsibility to remain vigilant and diligent and to continue to do that daily. If there is one thing that I can leave you with tonight, would be whatever it is that you do with your own personal program, do it daily. The meetings you attended last week, the steps you will be taking next week, have nothing to do with today. Today, you must maintain your sobriety. And if we do that, we get to stay sober. It is so simple. And it's sad when we see our friends just slipping away. They don't hear us anymore, and it's too late. There is nothing that we can say or do. They're just leaving. So if you are new, especially that first year, stay really close to us so you have a short leash. And I do still go astray on a regular basis, but not very far and not very long, because I'm amongst you and I'm being yanked back, always safely and soon enough. And this meditation helps calming my thoughts. When I first began, of course, good little alcoholic, I bought books on meditation, I studied it, and I made a little altar against the wall, and I have religious images on the wall, and candles, and burning incense, and my sponsor had set 20 minutes, so put the kitchen timer there, 20 minutes. I closed my eyes and my legs crossed, and I sat down. And then I heard the dog bark out in the street. Then I began to worry about how I would pay my rent at the end of the month, which was 3 weeks hence. Then I heard the humming in the refrigerator, and I thought of the ice cream I would have afterwards. Then my shoulders started to itch, but you can't move. Then I began to rehearse what I would say to that man towards whom I had a horrendous resentment the next time I saw him. And then, lo and behold, my leg is going numb. And I opened my eye, and it had been a minute and a half. It's getting better. But often it's still uncomfortable, and we talk about we are undisciplined. And those few simple suggestions in the big book help us becoming more disciplined. And so no matter what, I do it in the morning, I do it at night, I go to lots of meetings, I sponsor, I always have a commitment. There are things that I always do. In the morning when I wake up, you know, when your head is on the pillow and you roll it like this and you start opening an eye and I'm beginning to recite the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer and the serenity prayer to push that monkey behind me because it wakes up with me. I don't even think it sleeps. I think it's at the end of the bed waiting for me to open my eyes. So I have to be before it. I have to be ready and tackle that day. When we talked about loving one another and loving everyone, at work, we occupy several floors, and on one of them, there are three secretaries who are not liked by the other secretaries because they criticize, they report, they backstab, they are rude, disrespectful, very, very difficult. In fact, I would go in their area and I can feel the temperature drop. And I'm a warm water fish. I'm sensitive. And I had decided to try something, and I believe now that this was divinely inspired. At night, I began praying for all three of them. Actually, it was from Georgia's Step Workshop because she told us to pick people to pray for at night, and I chose those three. And I asked for God to provide them with happiness, peace, and joy. And would you know, 10 days into this, I was given an assignment amongst the Pyrenees for 2 weeks. And I finished Friday. And the third or fourth day into this experiment, another secretary came to me and said, "So, how is your experience on the fifth floor?" I said, "It is so joyful and peaceful. I'm having a wonderful time." She looked surprised and she said, "Why, you're going to change our reputation." And I finished my 2 weeks feeling love and harmony with these three ladies, and the temperature was as warm as I wanted to make it. It was not about them, although I had a lot of evidence to the contrary. The power of prayer. I no longer want to entertain negative, mean, destructive thoughts about people. It's not that I never do it again, but I don't want to, and I don't seem to indulge in it nearly as often. And I also am much more aware when someone else is indulging in negative talk about another, and they no longer have my support because I am not interested. To love one another. Alcoholics like us who are so self-centered, how can we? And we're so fearful. We're sensitive, afraid of not being wanted, and somehow we can conquer that. And love one another and be open. So what if we get hurt a little bit? So what? We get back up and we just do it again. Prayer and meditation. And of course, we try to carry the message, and that's why we're here tonight. And although going to meetings is a vital part of my program, because I look at this as though I had a kidney disease, and I have to go to the hospital 3 or 4 times a week to have my kidneys dialyzed for an hour or so, otherwise I will poison myself and die. So I come to these meetings to have my thoughts and my feelings dialyzed, otherwise I will poison myself and die. So going to meetings is absolutely vital. But it's also a very small part of my program. It's only half of the 12 steps where we carry the message. There are 11 and a half other steps to do. And if you see us here tonight, and you do, and we seem so graceful and it seems so easy, don't be fooled. This is like the sign on the lake. The swan who's so graceful and glides apparently without effort and so beautiful. If only you saw the little feet underneath the water going like this. These are the 11 and a half other steps that we do alone in the closet. And if I speak as though I'm the only one doing this, no, no. Otherwise, you would not be here tonight either. We're all doing our homework. And why not take a little bit of credit for this, for goodness sake? Not to take it away from our higher power, but without my willingness to call another alcoholic to drive all the way to San Diego to speak, to get on my knees every night and write in my journal to pray for these people and look at my day, my higher power could not provide me with contented sobriety. My sobriety is a result of taking these steps. And we can do all kinds of steps, 12-step work. In fact, I remember a few months ago, this is a weeknight, it's 11:30, I get a call from central office, then we have Eileen here on the phone for you, and she's drunk and she needs help. And so I called Eileen and she said, hi, I said, hi, this is Lynn, and I'm calling you back, how are you? Well, not too good, I lost my job last week and I've been at a funeral all weekend, and you could hear the ice crackling and the cigarette, and she was not in too good of a shape, and I said, well, I can understand sometimes things in life are pretty tragic and it's difficult. And then I wanted to establish a relationship with her, and I said, so are you single or married? She said, oh, I'm single. And I said, oh, I'm single. So she said, really? What a coincidence. And then we talked a little bit more, and I asked if she had pets, and she said she had two cats, and so did I. She said, wow, I can't believe, what a coincidence. I'm so glad I'm talking to you. And then we talked a little bit more, and a few other things that we had in common, and this was going on for about 15 minutes now, and it was time to get down to business. And so I said, well, since you called us, you probably have a drinking problem. Silence. Who the hell do you think you are? I can't believe they're letting you represent that company. Put me on hold and give me back to the man I was talking to earlier. I'm going to report you. I said, well, I think reporting me is a very good idea, but this is a home with a regular home phone, and I cannot put you on hold. She said, put me on hold or I'm calling my attorney. I assumed that she was in a blackout and had so much fun talking with me that she forgot who she was talking to. So wherever you are, Eileen, I hope that you are sober, and I hope that you come back to us, or maybe you're here tonight, and it was fun talking with you. We never know who we meet, what will happen. When I first got sober, I thought, what am I going to do with all my time? This is going to be boring. I'll never get another date. I'll never get a good job again. I can never be happy. How can I possibly go to a party ever again? Well, I will tell you, if you're new, that we have all kinds of activities. We have conventions, and we celebrate birthdays, and we laugh, we go to movies after meetings sometimes, we go for coffee. There is a full social life going on here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you can, take some phone numbers tonight or give your phone number away and begin to know some of us. I promise you, you never have to go through anything alone again. And although I have sympathy for the tragedies that Jim has had to go through lately in his sobriety with his mom and his brother, I've had tragedies myself. And if it had not been for you, I would not be sober today. Make no mistake. Because there have been some times when I hit a wall, and I remember my 50 of sobriety, when I felt so worthless and useless, and so full of fear that I did not want to go to another meeting. I did not want to do the AA thing anymore. After all my efforts every day, all those years, and I failed this way, and I didn't want to do it again. And I woke up that morning in a little ball under the blanket with a pillow over my head, and I didn't want to go out there one more day. So if I had been alone with my higher power or alone with my big book, it would not have been enough. I went to a meeting that morning and you were there and you put your arms around me. And I was able to go to that little job at $5 an hour, a temp job, and I'd send my resume everywhere. Nothing was coming through. My bills were not paid, not because I wasn't trying, and nothing was going my way. And so after that day, I went to the beach to meditate and be quiet. And what I heard was, my primary purpose in this life is to stay sober. And I had done that successfully for 5 years, and that my higher power was pleased with me. And to carry the message to others who suffer, and I had been doing that to the best of my ability when requested. And my higher power was pleased with me. But this was after we had the little talk, because I was mad at him. And I told him, I know that there are people who've been happy in obedience and poverty and celibacy and chastity, but I have not taken vows. I have not renounced anything. You have me confused with someone else. You take care of all your other little kids. How about me? I thought I had fallen through the cracks. But this was that day that I truly surrendered to my higher power. He knows what is best for me. He knows what is best for me. But I need you, when I go through these difficult, fearful, uncomfortable times, to put your arms around me, and I need to hear the laughter. And I go to my Carlsbad workshop meeting on Thursday night, and those third few rows, they're people who've been going there for 25 and 30 years. And to see the familiar faces there gives me a sense of safety, of security, that you're coming down that path with me. I am no longer alone. And I was so devastatingly lonely when I went to detox downtown. And I had spent a childhood lonely and teenagehood lonely, and that was the state of my life until I came to you. So we need each other, and all of you are here tonight. I am so grateful for your presence. Your smile, wherever I go, they are the flowers of my sobriety landscape. I think of you. You come with me. I cannot do this alone. I am tremendously grateful to be here tonight, to be among friends. I love you. I know that you love me. Thank you, Chris. She's been a part of my life for a few years now, and I'm so grateful for her. She teaches me so much, and I don't think that she knows it. If you are new, I beg of you to come back, whether it's for the laughter, for the hugs, for the coffee, because you have nowhere else to go. It doesn't matter. Because if you don't come here, it's not going to happen. Sobriety happens right here amongst us. And we will teach you about those few simple things that you need to do in order to be sober, if that's what you want. Thank you, Pat, again for having me, and God bless you all.